This is Maria with The Why, from Success to Startup Show, bringing you the whys of entrepreneurship on KLOS 95.5 FM HD3, SoCalArmenian.com.
Hello, welcome to Startup to Success. My guest today is Mike Kondo, founder of Mirth Management, also a professor dedicated to helping organizations and individuals find better ways to stay engaged, be more connected to those around them, and just get more enjoyment from their work and life. Mike, I'm so excited to have you on the show. Welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
Oh my God, professor. Wow. Okay, I'm going to dive all into that. But before we do, I love starting out with my favorite question. What's the why behind what you're doing today? What inspired you?
What inspired me was when I was looking at leadership and all the leadership programming that we see across the country out there on the web and all the attention that we face or we see on leadership, I started to notice that there was nothing about humor in leadership discussions. And when I was the director of the honors program, it was all about making our students the next change agents, the next leaders. And the more and more I looked at all this stuff, the more and more I was concerned that since no one was talking about humor, I knew that humor was important to being a good leader. I knew it was important to making people feel engaged and enjoy their work more. And it struck me as odd because one of the things that you'll see out there is that disengagement is really, really high and has been in the workforce for decades. And that's in spite of all the leadership work that's being done. So I started to think that this was one of the things that I could do based on the research that I do as a professor, to help people become more engaged, to use humor to be better communicators, to be better teachers, to be better leaders. And every day when I work with someone or when I write something, it's the thing that keeps me going, because not only is it fun to work with funny stuff, it's enjoyable when I get to work with people and show them just how easy it is that they can use humor when we're oftentimes afraid to do it because we're at work and we have to do serious things at work. And I'm here on an interview doing serious things to promote branding, and everyone just gets so hyper-focused that we tend to lose track of the things that do make the world enjoyable. And one of them is humor.
Oh my God, that's amazing. I would love to hear an example. So if I'm trying to bring in humor into my culture, what's one advice that you could give me?
So the biggest piece of advice is to start small. I like to use this kind of analogy when I talk to people. If you look at your workplace environment, your organizational spaces, and there's not a lot of laughter and not a lot of smiling going on it, think of it as kind of a clear-cut forest. You're not going to bring in rolling laughs right off the bat. You need to start small, okay? Make it appropriate for people to share personal details at work. Try and, as a leader, look at people and see them as individuals and ask questions about them as individuals, and then see from the information that you get from that, what you might learn about them that could help them and help you connect with them so that they feel more engaged. The basic need in creating humor is not to go out and do a comedy show. That's the wrong thing to do. The basic thing that you want to do is start allowing levity to take root. And if you sow the seeds of levity, laughter will follow.
Thank you. Thank you. That's great advice. So tell me a little bit about Mirth Management.
Right. So I started Mirth Management about 5 years ago, based on that stuff that I talked about earlier, where I just saw all this leadership discussion and all these people working and not a lot of people talking about humor. And there's plenty of research out there, wonderful social scientists that show how important humor is to good health, good psychological well-being, and a better and more engaged and more well or more efficient workplace. And I was like, okay, I can take some of this work that I do as a philosopher and some of this other work that I have exposure to in my research and try and develop some programming for folks, for people who run organizations, for leaders, so that they can learn not just how humor works, why it works the way it does, but how they can apply what the social science research and what the other research has shown so they can get measurable sorts of outcomes that help them, right? And let's just face it, making your workplace more enjoyable is a good thing in and of itself.
I agree. And it's been, you know, I know we talked about this for a brief minute right before we jumped on this interview. It's been really difficult to get people excited about the work, let alone, you know, focus on the culture and add the humor. And it's just so challenging nowadays for leaders to lead. I think it's just been harder than ever lately. Do you see that across different industries and verticals, the same issue?
Oh, yes. So, you know, I teach, and, you know, basically the disengagement that you see in the workforce, you also see as teachers in the classroom. You know, students just, it's difficult to get them excited or involved. And if there isn't some direct payoff to a thing that you're doing, and I mean right away sort of payoff, you know, students can become disinterested. And I think we see a lot of that in the workplace. Also, as workplaces have focused on becoming more efficient, more effective, that we focus a lot on deliverables and this sort of thing, we tend to squeeze out these places where play should exist that help us, you know, deal with the world better. One of the things that I noticed that's really important is that when we think about only deliverables, about only the things that we can do, the things that we've done, our to-do lists and this sort of thing, we tend to forget that part of a good work environment is having smiles and sharing laughs with the people that you work with. So one of the things that I would suggest to leaders, especially as they're trying to become more connected to the folks that they work with, is that they reveal to the people that they serve, the people that they lead, they reveal their sense of humor, because some research that I just had published, if a supervisor is seen as humorous, the people that work for them are going to see them as, they're going to feel closer to that person. And more importantly, they're going to feel less burnt out. And it's really simple. You don't have to do a lot of extra work to show someone your sense of humor. You just have to show it. And because we live in this world where it's work and deliverables, we need to be serious, it tends to close that off. And when we see that, when we see someone sharing their sense of humor, even if it's not something that I necessarily find funny, but if you find something funny, I do appreciate that you found it funny, and I feel closer to you because now I know that Maria likes jokes about dogs or funny cat videos or whatever it is that happens to be. And eventually, as we build that rapport, I'm going to feel more connected to the people that I work with as a supervisor, and the people who work with me are going to feel more connected to me. And that's one of the big drivers of disengagement.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you for that. How do you think being a PhD, well, having a PhD in philosophy has helped you in your career, especially now with what you're doing?
Oh, I don't know if it's actually done, you know, it's been very helpful in the sense that, you know, I'm a practice researcher and I can do that sort of thing. But usually when I introduce myself and I say I'm a philosophy professor, I get two responses. And the biggest one is I had that class, and they'll look at me like it was my fault. And I'm like, hey, I didn't teach that class. Don't blame me. But I get it. One of the best things that philosophy has given me is the ability to think clearly, to think critically. So much of what I focus on now in my basic, when I teach them, is to get students to try and understand the whys behind what they believe. And when you focus on that sort of thing, it really does make you try and understand better what's going on in your own head. And I think that is really important, because when I look at humor in the workplace, one of the things that I have to get people to understand is that I'm not just talking about going in and doing a stand-up routine or just doing jokes for joke's sake. That's not what it's about. Humor is kind of like salt to a dish. When humor is missing, the dish is bland, right? When you don't have any salt in that bread, it doesn't taste any good. And if you have too much salt in the bread, it tastes like salty bread. Humor in our day-to-day interactions needs to be like salt to a dish. It makes everything better. And so when I try and work with people, I use that kind of analogy to get them to understand, I'm not trying to get you to do less or do different. I'm trying to get you to remind yourself and remember that when we interact with folks, humor and smiles and laughter and mirth, the feeling that we get when we laugh and share laughs with people, is a really important part of our day. And one of the kind of the jokes that I make is, I said, if you had just met me and you thought I was even remotely funny, how much more willing would you be to say, hey, would you like to go get a cup of coffee or, you know, hang out and get a bite to eat, versus if you didn't think I was funny? And right. Totally different. And this is how important humor can be. Also, look at companies like Geico, Farmers Insurance, selling, what is the Limu Emu one? They're not telling you about their product. They're making funny videos so that you can remember that, oh, they're the ones that do the funny videos. and they sell insurance. Their entire marketing strategy is to use humor to get you to pay attention. So that should tell you if a multi-billion dollar company is spending that much money, humor is really important.
That's a great example you brought up. Actually, I'm in marketing and I do go through this process with a lot of our clients where when we're trying to figure out what copy points we're going to share with influencers and podcast hosts and so on, it's usually the first approach is let's keep it light. Let's keep it funny. Let's just keep it real. You know, let's not make it so people are already overwhelmed with so much. We don't need to bombard them with more stressful information. So that's a great example. Let's talk a little bit about your book, The Humor Hack, that just came out. Yay, beautiful cover.
Okay, sorry, that was the question. So I wrote this book in season one of the pandemic, right? Just as we were getting over the 6 to 8 weeks where we thought the pandemic was lockdown was gonna happen and we were gonna come out of it, I started writing it in the summer of 2020. And I was just kind of thinking about what I would like to take and do with all this research and this exposure that I have as an academic and how I could turn out a text that people would really like and engage with, but not be the sort of heavy-handed academic reading that I'm used to, that, you know, that I'm fine with, but, you know, most people, when they want to, you know, just pick up something to read, they're not necessarily interested in that. And so it's 13 chapters, because 13 is my lucky number. And it's all about teaching you what humor is and how it works. I have an allegory in there about if you want to know, because one of the questions I get a lot when I talk to different groups, different organizations and individuals is, well, how do I know when's the right time to use humor, or what's the right sort of humor to use? Well, I have an entire chapter where I say, look, if you think about humor as a house, that's going to give you all you need to know. Because if you're at the entryway, you've just met the person. So what you know about them and what they know about you is really small. So the amount of stuff that you can joke about or find humor in is going to be really limited. But you all share the same geographical area. You're out there in LA. Does LA have lots of summer? I think LA is always in summer, right? But is there always some sort of road project being done?
Right. Well, the 405 is always crazy. So yeah, we always make fun of the 405.
Right. So if I'm talking to someone in LA and if I happen to go out there and being on the other coast where I'm from, well, now I know that the 405 is always a mess and I can make a sly little comment about that that could make someone smile. And that's something at the entryway, right? And then maybe you're invited in, maybe you're invited to dinner, but if you've been invited to dinner, they know you better. So you're at the kitchen table. So the amount of humor that you can use because you know more about them is going to grow, right? And you're also going to know maybe the sorts of things that they don't like. So if it turns out that you're not a huge cat fan and my example of watching funny cat videos doesn't work, I'm going to say, oh, I need to stay away from that.
Right.
And if you use that idea of a house and the various rooms kind of being proxies for how close you are and how much you know, it is a really good handy guide to understanding, okay, when do I use humor and how and what sort of humor can I use in these situations? When in doubt, just remember you're at their entryway.
I like that. I tend to just make fun of myself. I find that the funniest way to start, you know, just easing up the conversation, and I'll just make fun of myself. I'll just say something about me that, you know, and then I feel that they start engaging. It's just
right.
And it breaks the ice a little bit.
Self-deprecating humor is awesome. And I started, you know, I kind of started with that as like, oh, when I introduce myself as a philosophy professor, I've had that class. That's me making fun of my profession and the people who do it. And yeah, it shows a level of humanity, a level of humility, and it makes you more approachable. So if you're a leader and you can use self-deprecating humor, that's going to be helpful.
Thank you for that. What's the one thing that you had to figure out that you can look back and say took your business to the next level?
So I am a big content guy. I'm a researcher. I do philosophy. Like I want to read and write and I want to read, you know, deep things, and I want to write a lot. And the biggest thing that I've had to learn coming from my background is I need to dial back the amount that I want to do because I want to give you as much as I can, but ultimately that's overwhelming. And I need to do a much better job at promotion and PR. I am fundamentally partially because I'm a philosopher and I teach classes that people take and I don't have to do any sales. So one of the biggest things that I wished I'd have done more of, and I still have to goad myself into doing a little bit more of, is this PR and, you know, getting used to this sort of style of interaction. So we all have weaknesses. We all have, you know, lacking points in our game, you know, mine's the 3-point line. So go out and try and work, even if it's something that's difficult for you, find that weak point, that place that you can improve and focus on it. And understand it's going to be one of the hardest things that you do, because what drew you into it is easy for you more than likely. Right. It's this PR, this advertising stuff that I'm still not great at, but I'm making a concerted effort to get better at.
Well, I think you're an amazing guest. So thank you so much for bringing that up. Well, how about social media? How I'm curious to know what the comfort level is when it comes to promoting and marketing your research and your expertise on social media platforms.
So I'm getting, I have my YouTube channel. If you just type in The Humor Hack, you'll find me. I'm violating the rule of, if it's a new YouTube channel, something every week, it's just me. So it's kind of hard to get, you know, I can't do Instagram and Facebook and LinkedIn and all. It's difficult to keep up with that level of content production. Now, the one nice thing about humor is that memes are just easy. So Instagram is just a great place for memes. So I tend to put up memes that I think are funny and deal with humor and the workplace and that sort of thing. But honestly, I haven't been as active on that lately just because I was writing the book and then doing that sort of work. With what I'm doing, I haven't yet found the best way to use social media to my advantage, because it's not something, you know, being, you know, older and not a digital native, it's not something I'm as comfortable with. So the thing that I need to do a lot more of is find ways to increase, you know, my like context, my shares, my follows. And unfortunately, since, you know, I'm a philosopher, no one's hitting like and subscribe to philosophy a whole lot. Those are things that I need to learn and keep doing. And part of being on this interview is to help me, you know, get more content that I can share. So kind of killing two birds with one stone.
I love that. And I think nowadays that's how we have to think about just doing one thing that can be amplified and distributed on multiple platforms. And I do agree. I think I have the same issue with social media. I tend to go on there and see these videos and I find it annoying sometimes. I'm just like, what's the point? You probably took half an hour to an hour to create this reel that does absolutely nothing. You're not teaching me anything. There's no takeaway. What is the point? But somehow I feel like, you know, 80% of the people who are on those platforms, they're attracted to that. And it's very difficult for me to start doing that, because I just feel like I'm wasting my time, I'm wasting the listeners' time, the viewers' time, and so on. And so it's been really challenging for me to figure out how I can take what I'm passionate about and the topics, which can get very technical sometimes, because we do performance marketing and I want to teach people about cost per acquisition and metrics and data and analytics and attribution methodology. And I know that people will be like, what is that? But I would love to get out there and teach them that, rather than dress up in 5 different outfits and create this video that shows these 5 different outfits. Like, I just don't see how I'm affecting people's lives in a positive way by wearing 5 different outfits and creating a video. So it's just, I feel like it's definitely a huge issue that a lot of people within our age demographics are dealing with. And the sad part is that in order for us to spread any thoughts, anything that we want to share on social media, we have to start thinking like them and figure out how to take our content and distribute it the same way. It's a bit challenging, and I'll share it with you when I figure it out. But when you figure it out, you tell me. One more question as we're coming to an end. What's one good thing and one bad thing about your industry, and what do you hope for in the future?
So a good thing and a bad thing about my industry and what I hope for in the future. Okay. So, I mean, one of the good things is that, and I say this in the book in the beginning, is like, I study humor and I study funny things. That is not a bad gig.
Right.
It is enjoyable to study funny things and fun things. It's even more enjoyable when I get to share that with people and show them not only that it's easy, because humor is something you're an expert at what you find funny. Now you just have to deploy that expertise, and you want to deploy it because you enjoy sharing the funny things that you enjoy with other people. So that's one of the benefits. One of the drawbacks to my industry, the biggest one, is when I talk about, you know, this topic of humor, almost automatically in the back of someone's head, they're thinking humor is jokes, jokes are laughs, and laughs are not serious, and not serious is not work. And you can see them. And so I actually have this in one from kind of a joke from one of my, you know, early attempts at, you know, entrepreneurship about pitching, you know, my idea. So I will go and talk to a business or a company or someone who's interested in bringing in people to do kind of leadership development or employee relations, that sort of thing. And I'll talk to them and I'll say, you know, what seems to be missing a lot from our workplaces, from our organizational spaces, is, you know, humor and laughter. Those seem to be kind of getting squeezed out, and we don't. And I think this is one of the main reasons we see disengagement. And they'll look at me and they'll say, you know, you're right. I think work needs more laughs and more humor. They said, it's really cool what you're doing. I'm like, cool enough to hire me? And they're like, not that cool. and so the philosopher in me goes, wait a second. From what I understand about sales, what I'm supposed to do is point out a problem, a problem that you feel. You've agreed that I've pointed out a problem that you feel. I've shown you the data and the energy, you know, the information, the research that shows that this is going to be one of the things that helps you fix that problem. And yet you're not convinced. So either I'm a horrible salesperson, which is totally possible. But probably what's going on is in the back of the head, they're thinking, how do I go to my boss and say, we're going to bring in this person to talk about humor and engagement, versus bringing in someone who's going to talk about, all right, so if you have, you know, this level of production at X percent and I can get Y percent and I have those numbers, but the very notion of humor comes in there and people are like, oh, that's not serious. We can't spend our money on non-serious things.
Right.
And for me, I just say, well, that's just bad thinking. Yeah. It really is, because humor, seriousness and playfulness, they're not opposites.
Yeah.
If you're working and you're doing well, if you're in a zone getting something done, you will have moments when you smile and laugh with other people or by yourself. It's part of how we exist throughout a day and how we do well. So the thing that I would hope, the thing that I want to see is, and I'm trying to work on this, not just in my book, but when I give talks and this sort of stuff, and when I go to companies, as I want to kind of push back against this division. Mm-hmm. So my hope is that people would learn that this division between seriousness and playfulness are not opposites. They're part and parcel of humans existing in the world, whether that be the workspace, your home life, your organizational space, working at a, you know, working at your nonprofit, whatever it happens to be. When, like I said before, when you have enough salt, the right amount of salt, it makes everything better. When you have the right amount of humor pushed out there in good places and in good ways, you're going to have a fundamentally better work experience, organizational experience, and you're going to have people who want to show up. So I don't think the Great Resignation is a big surprise. If you look at the disengagement numbers that had preceded that, pandemic just gave me a chance to not work and I hated my job anyways, done.
Yeah.
It's easy.
Yeah.
But if you had a space that people enjoyed coming to because they enjoyed the people that they work with, they shared smiles and laughs, they had fun, they're not going to not want to come back. They're going to want to come back. And they're going to stay longer at the end of the day if something needs done.
Exactly. Thank you. Where can our listeners get a hold of you? How can they learn?
So, you know, if you the book is available through the publisher's website, but it's also available, of course, on Amazon, The Humor Hack, my name. My website is, you know, mirthmanagement.co. Another new joke is when I'm doing, you know, filling out forms, the forms have not caught up with the fact that .co is an actual real, you know, extension on the web. They're like, oh no, it's supposed to be .com. I was like, nope, no, .co is the right one. I promise you, Google Form, I'm smarter than you in this regard.
Well, and thank you so much. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no. And then, you know, if you type in Mirth Management on Facebook and then find me on LinkedIn, Mike Kundle Jr. or Michael, not sure how it goes. Those, you know, I'm in the spaces.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Mike. Thank you. It's been a pleasure having you, and good luck with everything. I think we all need a lot of humor in our workplaces. Thank you for doing what you're doing.
You're welcome. And it was a pleasure to be here. I appreciate your time.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back on KLOS 95.5 FM HD3, SoCalArmenian.com.